Previously on Thomas and the Bible, because Mordecai refused to show the proper respect to Haman, he bribed the king to make a decree to kill all the Jews. Esther plans to get the king to remove the decree, so she enters before him to invite him to a feast. Haman plans to have Mordecai hung. However, by happenstance, the king asks Haman what he should give to a man he wanted to honor. Ironically, he suggests things that protect Mordecai. Esther exposes Haman, and the king hangs him on the gallows he had planned to have Mordecai hung on. Such biblically sweet justice. With a Thomas Yawn count of zero, as it was an interesting reading.
He speaks the truth. I mean, it's still hard to believe I didn't yawn. I'm going to have to go back and check the records on that. But it was an interesting reading. I have to say it was semi-interesting. So, we are on Esther 9. Let's see, announcements. Get on the Facebook, everyone. Facebook.com/TandTheB. And if you're on the Facebook, you will see other links to other stuff. But in addition, please write me an iTunes review for this show if you haven't, because, you know, this show can always use reviews, but you guys have been great with that. Thank you. But for my new show, Atheistically Speaking, episode 4 just released. It's very good stuff. If you guys saw the article, kind of made the rounds, called "Is Atheism an Intellectual Luxury for the Privileged or the Wealthy?" Something like that. I found it highly frustrating, and I'm sure a lot of you did as well. And we go through it and kind of poke holes in it. So that's something to catch over on Atheistically Speaking. It's a good show. I think you guys will like it a lot. So please go check it out. And if you do, please write a review for that show. And like I said, if you go to atheisticallyspeaking.com, there's a link on the right that says iTunes $20 gift contest. And that's something I set up in case you needed a little more incentive to write a review. I'm doing a little $20 giveaway to people who write reviews. So check out that link, because you have to obviously, you know, you have to claim your review on the site. Otherwise, I'm not going to know who's who. So if you're interested in a chance of winning $20, there's only 3 reviews, so you have a great chance. I mean, just go on there and fill it out, and you have a really good chance of winning a review, or winning a $20 iTunes card. So I could use that, but I don't get to play. So please do that. Thank you guys very much. I will keep the pitching to a minimum. And yeah, because that's all I got. And I will say, one more thing. I was on the Imaginary Friend show with Jake Farwarten again, and it was very fun. So check that out. It came out, it might have been like Monday. I'm not sure when we always record ahead of time, so I'm never sure when a show actually releases. I think it releases on Mondays, though. Seems right. It was good stuff. So check that out, and as always, thanks to Jake for letting me on that show. I have a great time every time I'm on, although I tried to ruin his show because my Skype was terrible, so I did my best to ruin it, but I think it still turned out okay. So, I'm hoping my audio is less echoey, because I got this little shieldy thing to put behind the mic. It's not sounding that much different to me, which is a little disappointing, but I'm hoping maybe you guys will notice a difference. If not, at least I have a big annoying audio or, you know, foam thing that's cost money and didn't do anything. So that's the benefit. I'm sure it's doing something. I just, maybe it's not getting all of the problem. I'm in a really bad acoustic room, so I was trying to find a solution to that. And that's another thing that costs money. So if you could donate to the show, that'd be fantastic. Esther 9. Now in the 12th month, that is, what month is it, guys? What's it called? What's the name? Name that month. It's Adar. On the 13th day of the same, when the king's commandment and his decree drew near to be put in execution, in the day that the enemies of the Jews hoped to have power over them, though it was turned to the contrary, that the Jews had rule over them that hated them, the Jews gathered themselves together in their cities throughout all the provinces of the king Ahasuerus to lay hand on such as sought their hurt. Sorry, I've got a new interface as well, so I'm fiddling with the thing. I normally can do this without detection. Uh-oh, no, that's the wrong switch. Everything's all new. How do I do anything here? I'm a dummy. Okay, there we go. Okay. The Jews gathered themselves together in their cities throughout all the provinces of the king Ahasuerus to lay hand on such as sought their hurt, and no man could withstand them, for the fear of them fell upon all people. And the rulers of the provinces and the lieutenants and the deputies and the officers of the king helped the Jews because the fear of Mordecai fell upon them. For Mordecai was great in the king's house, and his fame went out throughout the provinces, for this man Mordecai waxed greater and greater. Thus the Jews smote all their enemies with the stroke of the sword, and slaughter and destruction, and did what they would unto those that hated them. And in Shushan, the place the Jews slew and destroyed 500 men, and Parshend of... Oh, cool. So now that the Jews... They get one lucky break, the Jews do. They get one lucky break with this Esther, who miraculously saves them. And then they just go start killing everybody, because that's, you know... There we go. That's for that guy who's complaining about me coughing on the show. Sorry, I'm a human being without an edit button. And there's no mute button. There's no... I don't know who has a mute button. Maybe you should say that I should go back and edit these, but there's no such thing as a mute button on any equipment that I've seen. Maybe if you have a cheap ass mic, you can do a little mute. This is studio quality stuff. There's no mute button. Come on. The 10 sons of Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the enemy of the Jews, slew they, but on the spoil laid they not their hand. On that day, the number of those that were slain in Shushan, the palace, was brought before the king. And the king said unto Esther the queen, "The Jews have slain and destroyed 500 men in Shushan the palace, and the 10 sons of Haman. What have they done in the rest of the king's provinces? Now what is thy petition, and it shall be granted thee? Or what is thy request further, and it shall be done?" Then said Esther, "If it please the king, let it be granted to the Jews which are in Shushan to do to the morrow according to this day's decree, and let Haman's 10 sons be hanged upon the gallows." Wow. Okay, that's now this is taking a turn. I'm glad we ended. This is like the what is it like? It's like I don't know, an episode or a selection of the reading from Game of Thrones that has like a temporary happy ending. You know that crap's not going to last. You know it's not going to last. It just isn't. And same goes with the Bible. I'm glad last episode we had an ending where I was like, wow, this was a good story. This is some interesting stuff. And then we get to cut forward just one, you know, little couple inches of page. And here you have Esther like, now that she gets her way, the king's like, oh, what do you want? Oh, I don't know. Let's hang 10 innocent men. And that's nothing compared to the 500 men that the Jews have killed. Maybe you could say those men had it coming. But she's hanging the 10 sons of Haman, the guy who was kind of a dick. And like, I get it, but man, just hanging these 10 sons, it's not very nice. And they hang Haman's 10 sons, and they did it, so they did it all. "For the Jews that were in Shushan gathered themselves together on the 14th day also of the month Adar, and slew 300 men at Shushan. But on the prey they laid not their hand. But the other Jews that were in the king's provinces gathered themselves together and stood for their lives and had rest from their enemies and slew off their foes 75,000. But they laid not their hands on the prey. On the 13th day, the month Adar, on the 14th day of the same rested day, they made it a day of feasting and gladness. But the Jews that were at Shushan assembled together on the 13th day thereof, and on the 14th day thereof, and on the 15th day of the same, they rested and made it a day of feasting and gladness. Therefore the Jews of the villages that dwelt in the unwalled towns made the 14th day of the month Adar a day of gladness and feasting." You know, to break up in between the days of killing and hanging innocent people. Let's have a day of feasting, you know? We've done enough murdering. "And Mordecai wrote these things and sent letters unto all the Jews that were in all the provinces of King Ahasuerus, both nigh and far, far and nigh, to establish this among them, that they should keep the 14th day of the month Adar and the 15th day of the same yearly." Okay, so this is another holiday. Also, look, that's the 12th month, 14th day, 15th day of the 12th month. That's not Hanukkah, is it? I don't know, I'm going to sound really ignorant, but December 14th, 15th? No, Hanukkah's probably some other thing. I don't know these things. I grew up around no Jewish people at all, and I still don't actually know very many Jewish people. But at least I'm not as ignorant as I was as a child. As the days wherein the Jews rested from their enemies, and the month was turned unto them, from sorrow to joy, and from mourning into a good day, that they should make them days of feasting and joy, and of sending portions to one another, and gifts to the poor. Well, maybe this is. Gifts to the poor. Portions to one another, and gifts to the poor. I don't know. Sounds like a celebration in December. Oh, sorry. Adar. Yeah, like our Adar 25th. And the Jews undertook to do as they had begun, and as Mordecai had written unto them, because Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, the enemy of all the Jews, had devised against the Jews to destroy them, and had cast Pur, that is, the lot, to consume them, and to destroy them. But when Esther came before the king, he commanded by letters that his wicked device, which he devised against the Jews, should return upon his own head, and that he and his sons should be hanged on the gallows. Wherefore they called these days Purim, after the name of Pur, P-U-R, I don't know how to pronounce that other than that. Therefore, for all the words of this letter, and for that which they had seen concerning this matter which had come unto them, the Jews ordained and took upon them and upon their seed and upon all as joined themselves to them, so as it should not fail, that they would keep these 2 days according to their writing and according to the appointed time every year. And at these days should be remembered and kept throughout every generation, every family, every province, and every city, that these days of Purim should not fail from among the Jews, nor the memorial of them perish from their seed. When Esther the queen, the daughter of Abihail, and Mordecai the Jew, wrote with all authority to confirm the second letter of Purim, then Esther, so instead of when, that's why I had that tone. Then she wrote the letter and blah, blah, blah. And he sent the letters to all the Jews, to the 120 and 7 provinces of the kingdom of Ahasuerus. It's really Ahasuerus. I don't know. I was making an Ahasuerus, which would be like an extra sore for some. With the words of peace and truth. To confirm these days of Purim in their times appointed, according as Mordecai the Jew and Esther the queen had enjoined them, and as they decreed for themselves and for their seed, the matters of the fastings and their cry. And the decree of Esther confirmed these matters of Purim, and it was written in the book. Always got to write it in the book. Oh, Esther 10 is just a couple sentences. And the king Ahasuerus, how about that, laid a tribute, laid a tribute upon the land and upon the isles of the sea, and all the acts of his power and his might, and the declaration of the greatness of Mordecai, whereunto the king advanced him. Are they not written in the book of the chronicles of the kings of Media and Persia? I don't know, are they? Do we have to read those effing things later? For Mordecai the Jew was next unto King Ahasuerus, and great among the Jews, and accepted of the multitude of his brethren, seeking wealth, the wealth of his people, and speaking peace to all his seed. That's the end of Esther. So I'm going to pause it and cough the crap out of my throat. Okay, so if you hear a weird sound, I thought it was my cat or something going on. Turns out it's raining here. Very rare occurrence where I live, apparently. I don't know, it seems like it used to rain more, but the drought and all. So that's that little pitter-patter. Kind of cool. I like rain. It's good. It's a wee drizzle. But so we are starting the book of Job, and we are going to read, I believe, through Job 4. Down here. Yes, through Job 4, if I did my maths correctly. And I looked it up, and I wanted to have at least a little bit of background on what it is. And it said, it's the first poetical, I don't know why it's not poetic, but apparently it's poetical, book of the Bible. So that kind of leads me to say that, well, first off, I'm a little excited about this, and there's some quotes saying it's great poetry, blah, 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 and maybe it is. I'm not judging it yet. Maybe it's good poetry, and that would be a relief, frankly. But also, if this is the first poetical book, what does that say about what everything before this? Like, I don't know. Maybe this is a question for the more literary minded, which I'm not, admittedly. But it seems to me that the last everything we've read has just been law and history, and to say we're supposed to interpret those as like metaphor doesn't really make any sense, since they're not metaphor, they're history. It's like, it just doesn't make sense. So I think the fact that this is the first poetical book kind of reinforces that point, don't you think? I mean, I think that the perfect infographic, no, I guess it would be a meme, is or flowchart, that's what it is, it's a flowchart, is the one you've probably seen that basically explains the Bible. You know, it starts with a biblical text, and then the question says, has this been disproved or made to look ridiculous by science or, you know, modern understanding? If yes, then it's good news, it's metaphor. If no, then that's the word of God. And it's so that's pretty cool. I think there might be more to it, but I already can't remember. So let's start Job and Job 1. Oh, great. Does that mean there's a Job 2? How many books of Job are there? Yeah, let's start this. Let's see. Maybe it'll be good poetry. There was a man in the land of Uz. So close. I was hoping it was Oz. I thought we were going to get a cool little story, but it's Uz. His name was Job, and that man was perfect and upright, and one that feared God and eschewed evil. And there were born unto him 7 sons and 3 daughters. His substance was also 7,000 sheep and 3,000 camels and 500 yoke of oxen and 500 she-asses and a very great household, so that this man was the greatest of all men in the East. And his son went and feasted in their houses. His sons went and feasted in their houses, everyone his day, and sent and called for their 3 sisters to eat and drink with them. And it was so, when the days of their feasting were gone about, that Job sent and sanctified them, and rose up early in the morning and offered burnt offerings, according to the number of them all. For Job said, it may be that my sons have sinned and cursed God in their hearts. Thus Job did continually. Now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan came also among them. Oh, great, Satan. Yeah, I'm sure this is going to be very insightful stuff. And Lord said unto Satan, whence comest thou? Then this is the first mention of Satan, isn't it? No, sorry, that was a really dumb statement. Since the snake, Garden of Eden, since then, I kind of think this is the first mention of Satan. I don't think, because like that whole thing happens, there's a snake, thinking through it. I don't think Satan is mentioned until now. That's very interesting. And the Lord said unto Satan, whence comest thou? Wait a minute, what? How does the Lord ask Satan, whence comest thou? Well, don't you just know that? And anyway, then Satan answered the Lord and said, all right, I forgot, this is poetry. I might give it a little license. For once, I'm not going to give it license in the histories and in the law. That's inexcusable. But this is poetry. I'm going to give it a break. So this is just a device saying the Lord says unto Satan, whence comest thou? Okay, fine. I get it. Not art doesn't have to be literally true. I get that. If this is just art, but we'll see. Then Satan answered the Lord and said, from going to and fro in the earth and from walking up and down in it. And the Lord said unto Satan, hast thou considered my servant Job, that there is none like him in the earth, a perfect and upright man, one that feareth God and escheweth evil? Then Satan answered, well, that's not very nice. The Lord's just like calling Job out like, hey, Satan, check out this guy. He's perfect. If I were Job, I'd be like, you know, doing the little, what the hell is that sign? That like cut across the throat sign. I was doing it and I realized this is a podcast. Yeah, doing that like, hey, just be yep. Quiet. No need to draw attention to me, Lord. So really the lesson already, I know this is going to be bad for Job. I'm pretty positive. And the lesson is don't be the most good man in the world. Be the second most. Be the one that the Lord isn't going to like dangle in front of Satan. You know, be the second best guy in the world. That's the lesson already. I can already stop this. That's the lesson. Then Satan answered the Lord and said, "Doth Job fear God for naught? Hast thou made an hedge about him, and about his house, and about all that he hath on every side?" Interesting. "Thou hast blessed the work of his hands, and his substance is increased in that land, in the land. But put forth thine hand now, and touch all that he hath, and he will curse thee to thy face." And the Lord said unto Satan, "Behold, all that he hath is in thy power. Only upon himself put not forth thine hand." So Satan went forth from the presence of the Lord. At this point in the Bible, do we know if Satan's a bad guy? Like, if you're just reading this for the first time, I mean, you're sure he was a snake. You know, that's never good. But, you know, his motives in the Garden of Eden, I don't know that they were terrible. I mean, he just wanted them to eat the apple, you know. So as a reader, I'm curious, am I supposed to know if Satan is like this evil guy, or is Satan just like kind of cool, or he's just some person? You know, it doesn't really tell you. It doesn't really give you Satan's backstory. Like, how did he get to be where he is? I don't know. And I'm sure there's some story somewhere. But anyway, so it's interesting. Interesting concept. He's saying, Satan makes an interesting point. Satan makes a good point. He says, because God's saying like, oh, see how great this guy is, right? And Satan says, well, it's only because he has everything. Like, the minute you took something away from him, he's going to be pissed at you. So that's interesting. Interesting point. Food for thought. And then what the Lord said to Satan, I don't really get. Is he said, "Behold, all that he hath is in thy power. Only upon himself put not forth thine hand." I don't understand that. Maybe it'll be clear later. "And there was a day when his sons and his daughters were eating and drinking wine in their eldest brother's house. And there came a messenger unto Job and said, The oxen were plowing and the asses feeding beside them, and the Sabians fell upon them and took them away. Yea, they have slain the servants with the edge of the sword, and I only am escaped alone to tell thee." Okay, so something disappeared from Job. "While he was yet speaking, there came also another and said, The fire of God is fallen from heaven and hath burned up the sheep and the servants and consumed them. And I only escaped alone to tell thee." Okay. While he was yet speaking, there came also another and said, "The Chaldeans made out three bands and fell upon the camels and have carried them away. Yea, and slain the servants." I don't know why he said yea. "And slain, yea, no more work for me." He's like, yeah, I don't have to do anything anymore. Do I still get paid or what? "And slain the servants with the edge of the sword." Do they ever use the point of the sword or like for stabbing, or are they just the edge? I mean, I guess the edge is more like, you know, that sounds more rough, like just hacking away, you know, rather than a very careful point of the sword. "With the point of the sword. And only I am escaped alone to tell thee. While he was yet speaking..." Okay, we get it. So everything died pretty much. "While he was yet speaking..." So he's losing everything. I don't know if Satan did this. It's unclear. "There came also another and said, Thy sons and thy daughters were eating and drinking wine in their eldest brother's house. And behold, there came a great wind." Oh, now it's a wind from the wilderness, "and smote the four corners of the house, and it fell upon the young men, and they are dead. And only I am escaped alone to tell thee. Then Job arose and rent his mantle and shaved his head and fell down upon the ground and worshipped and said, Naked came I out of my mother's womb, and naked shall I return thither. The Lord gave, and the Lord hath taken away." Okay, that's a very good quote. It's a famous quote. "Blessed be the name of the Lord. In all this, Job sinned not, nor charged God foolishly." Wow, there's a lot to talk about here. Holy crap, guys. I might have to talk. So right away, my thoughts are, okay. The annoying thing is that this always has the protection of someone saying, well, it's poetry. Nah, it's poetry. Nah. But it's trying to say something, right? It's trying to say that it's making the point like, sure, it's easy to love God when everything's going well. But what happens when everything goes away? You need to also love him for killing your effing all your animals and for killing. Good to know that his sons and daughters, good to know they're just there for a test. You know, like their lives don't matter. Someone should have told them that when the house supposedly, well, this is just all fake, but when the house collapsed and killed them, like, how about someone said, hey, just like 5 minutes before, hey, everyone eating at this table, I know you have families, you're, you know, living great lives and you're all together, you're having a nice family gathering. Yeah, you're, I don't know how to put this. You're not really real people. Like, you are, I know, you're real people, but you don't matter. So, I'm going to kill you now. And the reason I'm killing you to death here in this house, I'm just going to crush you all to death. The reason I'm doing that is because I need to know whether Job likes me, or just likes me, you know, because if he likes me, then when I kill you all, he's not going to be mad at me. So that's okay. So yeah. So don't tell him. Okay. So I'm going to kill you in 5, 4, 3. Okay. You're all dead. So, okay. Like, I love that human beings can just be a test for another more important, supposedly, human being. It's great. I'm glad people don't think that way anymore, because that does sort of point poke a hole already in this, whether it's poetry or whatever. It's definitely a lesson. This is definitely a lesson. God, that the Lord haveth, no, the Lord giveth, and then he taketh away. And Job did not charge God foolishly. So it's interesting already that you need to thank God when something good happens, but when something bad happens, he's off the hook. He is off the hook. You can't blame him. Which is it? It's got to be either or. When something good happens, it's not God. If when something bad happens, it's not God. You know, like, this worship and all this, it just evolved out of this paranoia, that this need to feel like you're controlling every aspect of your life. And so you get this superstition, like, I need to be grateful, because you have this superstition to control every part of your life. And when even that sort of evolves to the extreme here, to say, you know, even when bad things happen, you need to be thankful. And the idea is that if you're thankful all the time, no matter what, then you'll be okay. You know, like, there's some way that you're going to be okay. It's just trying to have more control over your life. So this is interesting. I'm glad that this is at least generating some thoughts. You know, this is rare biblical territory. Job 2. Again, there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan came also among them to present himself. Oh, yeah, that was Job 1. I'm sorry. I read that as first Job earlier. That was dumb of me. There's just one Job. I'm dyslexic. I really am pretty dyslexic. Not terribly, but I do that a lot. Maybe I'm not, but I mix up letters a lot, especially when I'm typing. I type words completely inside out in a way that I didn't even know could happen. It's kind of funny. I'm probably just dumb. I shouldn't make an excuse. I'm just stupid. Yeah. So Satan again. Satan came also among them to present himself before the Lord. And the Lord also, I'm sorry, I got to go back. So this guy Job loses his whole family to freak accidents that are clearly God's fault in this world. Because what are the odds? On the same day, five different raiding clans come and take all his, you know, possessions, and then a house collapses on his family. And then how can you call it just or moral for him to just say, I don't care about my family. Easy come, easy go. Whatever. They're dead. But, you know, I still love God. That's the important thing. How narcissistic is that? Like, it's so important that you do the right thing with God that you can't even grieve for your family. You can't even be mad about your family being killed. 10 or whatever, however many was, sons and daughters and kids. Like, you can't even be mad at it because it's God. That is just completely immoral. Terrible. Okay. And the Lord said unto Satan, from whence comest thou? So I guess this is some sort of poetic device for him to have to ask it every time. And Satan answered the Lord and said, from going to and fro in the earth and from walking up and down it, as he said last time. So if God wasn't omniscient the first time, he could have at least avoided asking it by just being kind of good at remembering things, or not even that good, just like average at remembering things. So there's that. Was Earth perfect? Okay. And the Lord said unto Satan, hast thou considered my servant Job? Are we doing the same thing again? Okay. Sorry. I forgot this is poetry. So maybe it's like doing different versions of it. I don't know. We'll see. Hast thou considered my servant Job, that there is none like him in the earth, a perfect and upright man, one that feareth God and escheweth evil. It's a weird word. And still he holdeth fast his integrity, although thou movedest me against him to destroy him without cause. Oh, okay, so he did. That's kind of weird. So Satan influenced God. Who knew that could happen? So that's, God, how would you feel if you were the family who just died, or if you were Job? That, like, you're part of some test, you know, like Satan. And not only that, you're not part of just the Lord, like, or just, yeah, just the Lord. It's Satan is involved. Like, he's sort of in charge of things now. You know, he's the reason your whole family is dead is because Satan, you know, God kind of needed to prove to Satan some things. That's why your entire family's dead right now. Just so you know. And Satan answered the Lord and said, skin for skin, yes. All that a man hath will he give for his life. But put forth thine hand now, and touch his bone and flesh, and he will curse thee to thy face. Oh, God, this is so dumb. So now Satan's saying, yeah, okay, yeah, you got rid of all his family and his possessions. But if you hurt him, then I bet you he will curse you. And the Lord said unto Satan, behold, he is in thine hand, but save his life. He's in thine hand. I don't get that. He is in thine hand, but save his life. Because, like, the Lord keeps saying, like, okay, you're in control of this part. And I can't say I fully understand that. So went Satan forth from the presence of the Lord and smote Job. Okay, I guess the Lord authorizes. Okay, that's what it is. The Lord authorizes Satan to sort of do these horrible things. This is, you know, this is, it's psychotic. It really is. Because the people who wrote this think it's just this incredible poem. And the people who've read it in the centuries since think it's this incredible tale. Oh yes, this is such courageous. This is such courage on the part of Job. This is such true devotion that he can go through all these tests and then he still loves the Lord. Like that's what we should all aspire to. No, if the Lord is authorizing Satan to do experiments on you just to see if you really love the Lord, do you really love the Lord, or you just say you love the Lord? That's not moral. That's terrible. It's stupid. If a human did this to you, you would think they were the worst person in the world. You really would. What if your girlfriend murdered your whole family and said, like, so I know you loved me before when everything was great, but do you love me now that your family's dead? Huh? And you're supposed to say, like, oh yeah, that's great. No, it doesn't matter that he's God. That doesn't excuse him from this. It's just stupid. So the Lord authorizes Satan to give him some boils. So he does. So he smote Job with sore Job. That's reading too fast. Smote Steve Jobs with sore boils from the sole of his foot unto his crown. And he took him a potsherd to scrape himself withal. And he sat down among the ashes. Then his wife said unto him, oh, he still has his wife, dost thou still retain thine integrity? Curse God and die. Yeah, because that makes sense. So the wife is like, so you still like God? Because you shouldn't. And die. I don't know what the die part is. I think it's just put him out of his mercy. Because if you curse God, then you'll be struck by lightning or something. But he said unto her, thou speakest as one of the foolish women. Yeah, you fool. This guy who's lost his whole family, is everything he has, and he's covered in hideous boils. And he's like, you fool, let me tell you how things are done here, okay? Just imagine this guy totally, I mean, it would be horrifying if it were real, but just totally covered in just hideous boils saying, you fool, you speak like a fool. Oh my God. Shall we receive good at the hand of God, and shall we not receive evil? And all this, yes, that's true. God has the power to do whatever he wants, so you should expect that he would do good things and not do evil things to you. In all this, did not Job sin with his lips? Now when Job's three friends heard of all this evil that was come upon him, they came every one from his own place, Eliphaz the Temanite, Bildad the Shuhite, Zophar the Namathite, for they had made an appointment together to come to mourn with him and to comfort him. And when they came, and when they lifted their eyes afar off and knew him not, they lifted up their voice and wept, and they rent every one his mantle and sprinkled dust upon their heads toward heaven. So they sat down with him upon the ground 7 days and seven nights, and none spake a word to him, for they saw that his grief was very great. Yeah. Okay, Job 3. I can't believe we have two more. After this opened Job his mouth and cursed his day, and Job spake and said, let the day perish wherein I was born, and the night in which it was said, there is a man-child conceived. Let that day be darkness, let not God regard it from above, neither let the light shine upon it. Let darkness and the shadow of death stain it, let a cloud dwell upon it, and let the blackness of day terrify it. As for that night, let darkness seize upon it, let it not be joined unto the days of the year, let it not come to the number of the months. Lo, let that night be solitary, let no joyful voice come therein. So he's just cursing the day he was born. Literally, this might be the origin of cursing the day he was born. Very elaborately, very poetically. Let them curse it that curse the day, who are ready to raise up their mourning. Let the stars of twilight thereof be dark. Let it look for light, but have none. Neither let it see the dawning of the day. The age of Aquarius. Because it shut not up the doors of my mother's womb, nor hid sorrow from mine eyes. Why died I not from the womb? Why did I not give up the ghost? Give up the ghost. Interesting. When I came out of the belly, why did the knees prevent me? Why the breasts that I should suck? For now should I have lain still and been quiet. I should have slept that then had I been at rest with kings and counselors of the earth, which build desolate places for themselves, or with princes that hath had gold, who filled their houses with silver, or as an hidden untimely birth, I had not been as infants which never saw light. There are wicked cease from troubling, and there are weary be at rest. There are prisoners rest together. They hear not the voice of the oppressor. The small and great are there, and the servant is free from his master. Wherefore the light is given to him that is in misery, and life unto the bitter in soul, which long for death, but it cometh not, and dig for it more than for hid treasures, which rejoice exceedingly, and are glad when they can find the grave. Why is light given to a man whose way is hid, and whom God hath hedged in? For my sighing cometh before I eat, and my roarings are poured out like the waters. For the thing which I greatly feared is come upon me, and that which I was afraid of is come unto me. I was not in safety, neither had I rest, neither was I quiet, yet trouble came. So, I mean, that was a very poetic way of saying, F this, like this sucks. And looks like 4 is short. I'm going to read 4 and then maybe I'll talk more about everything at length. Because, I mean, it's at least giving us stuff to talk about. I do really... Oh, man, this bothers me. Sorry. I'm a little OCD and there's a stain on the... It's not my mic thing. I'm using my brother's and it's stained and it bothers me. And you think Job's got troubles? Well, my breath guardy thing, what the hell is this called? I don't even know. Pop filter. That doesn't do a good job, apparently. Pop filter. It has a stain on it. And you think Job has a hard time. And I'm already cursing God. Like, there's just a little stain, and I'm like mad at God. No, not really. I shouldn't even say that, just in case, just on the off chance, somehow a religious person is listening and says, oh, I knew it. Atheists just hate God. Nah, there's no God to hate. I don't hate things that don't exist. If God did exist, rest assured, I would hate, if this God existed, he would be completely deserving of hatred. That's for sure. Then Eliphaz the Temanite answered and said, if we essay to commune with thee, wilt thou be grieved? But who can withhold himself from speaking? Behold, thou hast instructed many, and thou hast strengthened the weak hands. Thy words have upholden him that was falling, and thou hast strengthened the feeble knees. But now it is come upon thee, and thou faintest. It toucheth thee, and thou art troubled. Is not this thy fear, thy confidence, thy hope, and the uprightness of thy ways? Remember, I pray thee, who ever perished being innocent? Or where were the righteous cut off? Even as I have seen, that they that plow iniquity and sow wickedness reap the same. By the blast of God they perish, and by the breath of his nostrils they are consumed. The roaring of the lion and the voice of the fierce lion, it's kind of weird, and the teeth of the young lions are broken. The old lion perisheth for lack of prey, and the stout lion's whelps are scattered abroad. Now a thing was secretly brought to me, and mine ear received a little thereof. In thoughts from the visions of the night, when deep sleep falleth on men, fear came upon me, and trembling, which made all my bones to shake. Then a spirit passed before my face, the hair of my flesh stood up. It stood still, but I could not discern the form thereof. An image was before mine eyes. There was silence, and I heard a voice saying, Shall mortal men be more just than God? Shall a man be more pure than his Maker? Behold, he put no trust in his servants, and his angels he charged with folly. How much less in them that dwell in the houses of clay, whose foundation is in the dust, which are crushed before the moth? They are destroyed from morning to evening. They perish forever without any regarding it. Doth not their excellency, which is in them, go away? They die even without wisdom. I think he's essentially saying that humans don't deserve anything. Because, like, I mean, he's saying God is, if with God, how he doesn't even trust his angels. Like, what are we? We're nothing. So, I mean, I think I might need to read forward to really get the meaning of this, because it is it's poetic. So it's hard to distinguish what's being asked, like as a question. What am I trying to say? What's being asked as a rhetorical question to prove the opposite point, and what's genuinely being asked. So, like, if you know what I mean, it's like he asks a question, and I don't know if he's saying, like, you know, how could God do this, or if he's asking that question as in sort of almost a mocking way, to mock, or not mock, but sort of like prove a point to Job. It's hard to tell which at this point. So we'll see in our next reading what Eliphaz the Temanite thinks, which is not that terribly important. But anyway, but essentially the message I'm getting is that we're just nothing. So, I mean, why would we deserve someone who has the power to do good? Someone has the power to maybe not make our lives easy, but at least not play little games with Satan and destroy our entire lives just to see if we like him, you know? The religious counter-argument is always, well, you know, free will. First off, free will. So God doesn't make everything good because free will. That's first off. But he has the power to not ruin our lives. So he could do that. He could have not given us all these diseases. And then they say, oh, well, you know, there just has to be, life can't just be easy. And then to that, I always say, and you've likely heard me say before, God is the one who created all of reality. So you saying, well, he can't just make it easy for us. Au contraire, he could have created a reality in which it wouldn't be bad for him to make it easy for us, if that's even true. I doubt that's even true. It's sort of the tough parenting kind of line that Christians take. Well, you know, if you're a parent, you can't just give your kid candy every day. Similarly, if you're God, you can't just, I don't know, maybe prevent people from being killed or dying of starvation, all that. Like, it's the same, like it's morally equivalent. But even if we grant them that, even if we say, okay, God's got to be a stern parent. He's got to teach you lessons in your suffering, you know, which is just horrible. But we're granting that. We're granting that. Okay, he's got to be a good parent. Oh, except he could have created reality in such a way that he didn't need to be a good parent. Was he limited in that? Are you saying God didn't have an option? He had to create reality in this way? Oh, wait, no, God's all-powerful. He can do whatever he wants. So he could create a reality, and maybe he has because he's timeless and he's God. You know, he does whatever he wants all the time. He could create a reality in which it isn't a big deal to just let us be happy. You know, he doesn't have to do this tough parenting and teach us lessons and stuff. He could do that because he's God, and he doesn't, and he didn't. So, immoral. So that's that. This Job book is looking interesting, though. I'm glad. It's given me stuff to talk about. And although I still find it hideous, it's at least a little bit more intelligible and interesting than boring history. So there's that. Okay, so we're done for the day. And yeah, I hope the sound quality was a little better with my new interface, although the sound quality is not going to be that noticeably different with my new interface. Actually, it probably won't be different at all. It just actually works and doesn't, you know, it's better on my computer. But the little, hopefully that's less echoey. If you happen to think of it and want to let me know if you think it's any better, let me know. It might not be. It's annoying if it's not. But anyway, so yes, like I said earlier, please, Atheistically Speaking, check it out. Good conversations going on. And thank you so much for listening, my fine, fine listeners, who I really like. And I'm glad that you get something out of the show as well. All right, I'll see you next episode. Adios.